Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love basketball, there's a good chance you love movies about basketball. I even had the chance to be in one, Like Mike. You've probably seen it. It's about a kid named Calvin Cambridge, played by Lil Bow Wow, who comes across a mysterious pair of old sneakers inscribed with the faded initials MJ. And the rest? Well, you should watch it. Here's one of my scenes, which we shot on the set of the NBA on NBC.
The big story in the NBA, Calvin Cambridge, the 4'8" dynamo, has now signed a lucrative contract with the Knights. And no wonder, after he led them to a come-from-behind win over the Spurs with 27 points, the kid was unbelievable.
Another one of my favorite hoops movies is a send-up of something a little closer to reality, at least for me.
Very successful in this 9th annual ABA All-Star Game. Exciting game here.
Semi-Pro, starring Will Ferrell. Set in 1976, the final year of the American Basketball Association. In Semi-Pro, the fictional Flint Tropics are doing whatever they can to survive a merger with the NBA, despite having the worst record in the league. Will Ferrell's character is a team owner, head coach, starting power forward, and pregame analyst. Scott Armstrong wrote the film.
They had to compete with the NBA, which was like impossible for them at the time. In order to compete with them, they had to like step up, you know, the showmanship and step up the excitement of the game. So they added things like the three-point line. They added the dunk contest. They had like a rainbow ball to play with and like gave out prizes and had halftime shows.
What makes Semi-Pro fun for me is that many of the teams actually existed. The characters are based on real people, and some of the crazier stunts, like bear wrestling, those actually happened in the ABA.
See the Destroyer wrestle Victor the Bear, 400-pound Victor the Bear.
I saw a charity event in Peoria, Illinois, in like the early 90s. Like, I happened to see like people like were allowed to wrestle a bear for charity or whatever, and like now you would never ever ever be allowed to do that, but they used to do stuff like that in the 70s. And so that kind of inspired that scene where like Will Ferrell would wrestle a bear at halftime. We worked with a real grizzly bear, and we were in the gym with like a trained grizzly bear for half of it. You know, of course, like Will was never in danger or anything, but there was one moment where there's this guy just like blowing a whistle, and like the bear was not listening to the whistle. And I'm like watching this, and he's going like that. And then the trainer's just like, everyone get in the bathroom. And like, we all had to like go into the bathroom of of this like stadium that we built, and we're like hiding in there with like the door closed.
When you're in the ring with that bear, you got to keep him busy or he's liable to just walk away from you and wander the ring and back to his cage.
So the bear could just wander around the stadium by himself and not eat anybody. It was hilarious.
Oh my gosh. How did the bear finally get to where it was supposed to go?
I don't know. He just started like listening again. And like, we're, and of course, like we need to get like a certain shot. So we're like, can we just do one more? I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like, it's like that balance of like, will the director get eaten? How bad do we need the shot?
The film captures the essence of the ABA. Players, coaches, and executives like my dad, Mike Storin. A gang of ambitious dreamers who loved basketball and were determined to be part of the NBA. Was there anyone real that you modeled some of your characters after?
There's some moments, you know, like trading for a washing machine, like when Monix got traded for what that really happened. I mean, they're kind of amalgamations of like types, you know what I mean? So I can't say it was like someone, you know, but like, again, I know it's a ridiculous, silly movie, but like at the heart of it, there is sort of like being the best you could possibly be.
I'm just so happy that it exists, that the film exists, because I think that so many people, and really my motivation for doing this podcast was, you know, not only because I grew up around the ABA, but I was like, I know that there's so many people who watch a game today that have no idea. They don't know that this took place. They don't know where all this came from.
I can't believe it happened. It really did happen. It really was insane. Like these guys traveling on buses and like dunking, like doing stuff in a way that was like to half filled stadiums. There was a freedom to it. It's like 70s America, free love, free basketball.
Every movie has an ending. And so did the ABA. It was over in 1975. When a fraction of the teams left from the league's heyday made their way into the NBA. It's the journey to get there that is part of the screenplay of my life. And this podcast documents all the plot twists, storylines, and characters along the way. I'm Hannah Storm, and this is NBA DNA. Episode 2, The Merger.
Quick outlet to Louis Dampier. Push it from UB Brown. He wants Kentucky to get it up quickly. Now they'll go into the series that takes it on the post to Gilmore. He's got it in good position.
Throughout the history of the ABA, there was always an underlying belief on the part of certainly every owner that we should merge with the NBA.
Standing room only here in Manhattan as the Lakers keep up the pressure.
The issue was if we can create a merger with the NBA, we will then become one big happy family. Our franchises will be very valuable, and we will be economic and psychological success. So every time a new owner came into the league, and there were a lot of them, one of the things that they believed was, I will create a merger.
That's my dad, Mike Storin, the ABA's fifth commissioner. In the same 2014 interview you heard in the last episode. At the time the ABA was formed in 1967, the NBA was just over two decades old and had been fending off competing basketball leagues. Potential investors in the ABA were told they could get a franchise for half of what it would cost to get an NBA team, with a price as low as $10,000 for a team. At one point, many were scraping by. Here's St. Louis Spirits play-by-play man Bob Costas.
Being thrown out. ML Carm, this is a 20-footer. Kentucky rebound.
No joke. There were times when we would, let's say, arrive in Denver and they're about to pass out the keys, but they won't give them to us because we haven't paid the bill from the last time. You know, and teams like the Virginia Squires, they threaten strikes, player strikes, because the last few checks had bounced. That's kind of what the ABA was, at least for some of the franchises.
Dr. J underneath, unbelievable. Dr. J.
You know, if you got a check, you ran to the bank real quick and made a deposit just to make sure it held up.
Make sure it be cashed.
ML Carr was, he talks about it the most. He said, man, I had to get down there quick. I didn't want my check to bounce. I wanted to be the first one in line, not the 12th guy, because there's 12 men on the team. So maybe by the time you get to the 12th guy, there's a problem with his check.
The Holy Grail was a national TV contract to make the ABA viable. One of the league's founders was NBA Hall of Famer George Mikan.
Harrison fires to Mikan, and when Big George hits, it's 69-68 the Lakers.
Who became the ABA's first commissioner.
George, after being the foundation for creating the league, ownership group, decided he wasn't the right man to move the league forward. And I don't even remember who the second commissioner was, but there was one. And then the owner said, oh, we need a guy with television experience because we need a television contract. So the next commissioner was a guy named Jack Dolph, who was formerly vice president of sports programming for CBS. And everybody said, oh, this is great. Jack's going to get us $1 million television contract and we're all going to die and go to heaven and the ABA will be very successful. Well, Jack couldn't get him a television contract and they couldn't die and go to heaven with all the television money they expected. They said, we got to get somebody else in here.
Seven commissioners in 9 seasons. My dad was tapped as number 5. In large part because his Kentucky Colonels were perennial contenders for the title.
Kentucky rebounds, Dampier baseline to
selling out every night. 15 to 18,000 fans packed into Louisville's Freedom Hall to watch Dan Issel, Louis Dampier, and Artis Gilmore put on a show.
Gilmore setting up low inside, feeds to Roberts from about the free throw line, and he scores again.
My goal as commissioner was not to create a merger, but was to create a league that would be the best basketball league in the world. So I was a logical choice to take the league forward, to build a league on its own merits, and to not spend all of my time trying to figure out how it was we could get a merger.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering 2 shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The basketball itself, as we have documented, was highly entertaining. But another part of the ABA legacy is the show around the game. Anything to get people into the seats. Some of my dad's ideas through the years worked out better than others.
One of the great promotions that I created was a pumpkin carving contest. And the theory was that at halftime, we would select 10 people from the stands who would come down and carve pumpkins, and we would turn lights out, and the crowd would be excited by the wonderful pumpkins they'd carved. Well, of course, it takes a long time to carve a pumpkin, so we pre-carved the pumpkins for them. So all they had to do was come down and pull the pieces out. But we turned the lights out, and several of the people fell down with their pumpkins, and the pumpkins splattered on the floor.
A bit more successful, perhaps, was the time my dad featured a team of Playboy bunnies on the court at halftime of a Colonels game. There were also cow milking competitions, the first ever halter top night, and let's not forget the famous bikini-clad ball girls in Miami. Now, since this wasn't on TV, it was really up to the writers to document it all. Here's longtime basketball writer Peter Vesey.
I don't remember anything but the cheerleaders, so I don't.
Of course you don't.
You know, Nedelecki will tell you that he thinks that I dated a cheerleader from every city, and he's right.
Peter started covering professional basketball in the 1970s when he wrote about the ABA for the New York Post. Or maybe lived it would be more accurate.
After the game, we would all go out and party.
I was going to say, you weren't getting to bed early because of that early flight. That was not happening.
No. No. One of the trainers, Fritz Masman, taught me early that you got to go to sleep with your clothes on.
Save a step in the morning.
That was big, you know, So whatever you went to sleep with that night, you were waking up with that next morning. So, you know, you might get 2 or 3 hours sleep, whatever, but we were out partying.
Back to Bob Costas, who was rolling with the St. Louis Spirits. What'd you guys do when you were hanging out?
Well, you know, sometimes we'd go to dinner together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'd, you know, gather in the hotel or a road game afterwards. At practices, I could shoot. I couldn't play. I was too small to really play. I couldn't guard anybody, and if I was guarded, I couldn't get a shot off. But if we were just shooting free throws, back then I could shoot, and I would win bets. I would get in three-point contests and in free throw contests with some of the guys who I knew I could beat.
Oh, wow.
And then they got wise because I was taking their money.
Yeah, it was crazy, but crazy fun. And the sports world took notice. Peter Carey, who would eventually become executive editor of Sports Illustrated, was assigned to cover the Renegade League.
First of all, the ABA had a three-point shot, which the NBA didn't have at that time. The game was more open in the way it was played, so it was more running, more excitement, and so on and so forth. A guy came out of nowhere named Julius Erving, and he became a very compelling player that people wanted to see.
One of the more enduring ABA ideas is something we see every All-Star weekend, the Slam Dunk Contest, which took place in 1976 at the ABA's final All-Star game before the merger.
The judges will score on each dunk on a basis of 5 to 10 points.
And here's Dr. J.
The first was in Denver. It was an ABA idea. You know, the lineup was me and Larry Keenan, George Gervin, David Thompson.
The man that has turned the slam dunk into an art. At 6'6" for the New York Nets, the fabulous Dr. J. Julius Erving.
So didn't you start by dunking two balls in the hoop? Isn't that how you began that slam dunk contest?
I've seen the video a few times, and I think it was, you know, just dunking two balls at the same time.
And now the doctor goes to work.
Yeah, which was something that, you know, not everybody can do. I mean, there's plenty of guys who can't do it. They usually go one and the other, and two at the same time is a little bit different. But I think the question was, why are you synonymous with dunking? I think that dunk contest and dunking from the foul line at the end and David missing on one of his dunks kind of paved the way, because he was doing great dunks too. He was doing pirouettes from the corner, and you know.
David Thompson finishing it with a twist around, patented slam dunk.
With his leaping ability and his, and he was at home because he played for the Nuggets. You know, I felt a little threatened by
you
him.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. I felt threatened by him. I mean, you know.
You thought the Skywalker was going to maybe take that dunk title instead of you, that
well,
first
there was,
one.
Nobody
okay.
had the title.
That's right.
This was a title to be earned.
Okay. Tell me about the free throw line dunk, where that idea came from, you know, how many times you had done that.
And that sends everyone really. Julius Erving.
I'm going to definitely credit Converse with that one, because if I didn't have the Converse on, it never would have happened.
And the reason I
had the Converse on is because I did basketball clinics for Converse for kids. And I would always end the clinic with a dunk from the foul line. That was my exit. You know, it's like, you know, somebody's on a stage and they dance, they got the cane, blah, 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 and they dance and they dance their way into the off the stage, and then they come back out for the ovation.
You would just dunk your way off the court.
And then I leave.
I love it.
And then they'd be like, oh, they're all standing up going crazy, and I come back out and take a bow.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
What did you think when you saw MJ do it years later?
Well, here's what happened. Because I was there, and we were like courtside. And this, Michael's in this heated battle with Dominique.
Now, Michael Jordan told me he had something special. He may be trying to take off from the free throw line, a la Julius Erving. Let's see what happens. He kind of measured it from there.
And he looks over at me, and I'm like pointing.
Do it.
Go back down there. And he talks about this in interviews or whatever. Go back down. So he runs back, and then he comes dribbling, and you know, when he jumps, he does a little pump.
That's gotta be a,
you know, the rest was history.
It was derivative of the ABA's approach. While great players like Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar were not allowed to dunk in the NBA, and dunks weren't allowed in college, for that matter, the ABA allowed playground moves that made the game so exciting. Moves popularized in places like Rucker Park, a Harlem court that's hosted some of the greatest players to ever play the game. Vesey coached in Rutgers Summer League. That's where he first met Dr. J.
So Julius is coming out of college, and I had a friend of mine who played at Hofstra, a guy named Dave Brownville. I went to Hofstra for a year, played ball there for a year, left before they asked me to leave. So I asked Dave. Dave was very good friends with Julius. You know, do you think Julius would want to play for me in the Rucker? I'm starting a team. He asked them, and he came. We're coming into Rucker Park for the first time, me, first time him. And we sit on a bench, the three of us, and Julius says to me, how much am I going to get paid? And I said, Julius, as far as I know, nobody's getting paid in the Rucker tournament. And he said, okay. He said, let me think about it. So him and Dave walked around the park, came back, started lacing up his sneakers. Let's go. And so the first game that he played, we played against Tiny Archibald's team, and it was raining, so we had to go indoors. And Tiny's team was loaded with pros, just like my team was. I had Charlie, I had Julius, I had Billy Pauls, I had Ollie Taylor. But he did too. He had Austin Carr.
Mm.
You know, the year before, he had Dave Callens, rookie year.
Wow.
You know, loaded. Each team was loaded, and they beat us indoors. But on one play in the first half, Julius is driving down the sideline, right sideline, and he takes off. There are two people in front of him. One guy was Marvin Roberts. Do you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
He's like 6'9".
Right.
So Julius takes off from about 15 feet, 20 feet away from the hoop. And we're like, what is this? He goes over both of them and dunks.
Wow.
And we had never, ever seen anything like that.
The Rucker Park happened before the ABA. I mean, I actually, after my junior year of college, before training camp started, you know, Charlie Scott, who's the leader and the captain of the Virginia Squires, he and Fatty Taylor, he invited me to come and play in the Rucker. And when we were playing for Peter Vesey's team, you know, one of the things that I really loved to do was go on and dunk the ball. So when I got to the Rucker League, you know, it was, I mean, my jaw dropped. Players were playing at the highest level of playground basketball.
What does it feel like to dunk a basketball? Because, you know, 99.9% of the population has never felt it.
You never felt it?
What's it like? You never climbed a ladder and just...
You never climbed up the steps?
Come on. What's it like?
Never did that? No. Okay. All right. It's probably be hard to hold the ball with one hand too, right?
Yeah.
So I have made a hole-in-one in golf.
All right.
My second year when I was playing. And a hole-in-one is a lot harder than dunking a ball. It exceeds the experience of dunking a ball. And dunking the ball is kind of parallel, if anything, it might be knocking it out of the park.
Okay.
On a given day, because in the course of a game, you know, there's going to be a certain number of home runs or whatever, but when you knock it out the park, you know, dunking the ball is like, knock it out the park, you know, come in. And you know there's going to be some kind of resistance, or maybe not today's game, but there was always somebody there. There was always somebody there in my era, I know. In the previous era, there's always somebody there trying to knock your teeth out or trying to put you on the ground and put you in your place. And my place is here, up in your chest, dunking this basketball. That's where my place is.
What's your favorite dunk? Do you have a favorite?
So Elvin Hayes was a great basketball player.
Dennis Autry at 6'10 against Elvin Hayes. Hayes at 6'9, and you see Larry Wright coming up with it. Moving to your left.
The Hall of Famer earned his kudos. And the only flaw he had, from my perspective, was when he defended the basket, he'd jump in the air, and he'd have both hands up in the air. And I saw him do this time and time again. So we're playing the Bullets, Washington Bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming off the wing, and I get around Bobby Dandridge, and Elvin's back there defending the basket. Take this. So it looked like goalposts.
Right.
When you're playing football, and you got goalposts like that. So that was the goalpost defense. And I end up chest to chest. I actually feel his chest against my chest, and we're both in the air. So we're chest to chest, and I'm coming with my right hand, and I move it over to in between the goalposts. And then I dunk the ball, and the whole Capitol Center gets quiet. It was like, because that was their guy. But that moment goes down with me as probably the best in-game dunk that I ever had, because, you know, he's 6'9", 6'10", and he's strong. And then it happened, and then it was punctuated.
I love it.
And a dunk isn't great unless it's punctuated.
Peter Carey wrote the first national article about Julius.
I say to him, this guy's an emerging figure. We've got to put him on the cover.
Right.
So I'm writing the story. And I'd actually approached Julius before the game and said, do you feel comfortable dunking in warmups? Which I knew he did, but I didn't want to ask him to do something he didn't want to do. And he said, yes. And I said, okay, we're probably going to have a photographer shooting you while you're dunking in practice because I want a picture of you dunking. He says, okay. So the teams come out on the floor and there's no Julius.
Oh.
And I'm sitting there scratching my head. I'm sort of standing behind the Nets bench and Julius isn't there, and they're doing all their shooting and stuff. And then finally, over in the corner of the stands on the opposite side, I see Julius is talking to a guy and a little kid in the stands. And I don't know what the hell's going on here. Anyway, so time passes, and the pregame warm-ups have ended. And he comes loping across the floor. He doesn't even go to his bench. He comes directly to me. And he said, I'm sorry, but that man up there is a rabbi from, I think, Buffalo. And he's brought his son down here to see me play as a bar mitzvah present. So I thought I had to, you know, pay some attention. I said, okay, I understand, I understand. He said, but don't worry, I'll get you a dunk in the first quarter.
I love it.
A few minutes into the first quarter, steals the pass, goes down the floor, takes off at about the foul line. He had a kind of a very airy afro. And so when he was really going fast, it sort of got swept back a little bit. And he's like, you know, a foot above the basket, coming down really hard. And that ended up being on the cover of the magazine.
Wow.
And he willed it.
That is incredible.
Dr. J.
So why was this incredible talent in the ABA instead of the NBA? Well, that had a lot to do with my dad, who helped create what was known as the hardship rule, enabling Dr. J to play as a pro in the ABA after his junior year in college, something the NBA did not allow.
You know, my stepfather worked for the sanitation department, and he made about $10,000 to $15,000. The two of them together probably made $10,000 to $15,000.
Right.
So the economics of it were off the charts. And they had a caveat where they were paying over 7 years. Mm-hmm. So it was $500,000, but you get paid over 7 years. So you're basically making like $72,000 a year. I wasn't making anything in college. So I called my mom and we had a heart to heart. And she said, well, you're only 1 year away from graduating. And, you know, we would be very proud of you if you graduated. And if you promise me you're going to graduate, then do what you want to do.
Julius signed a 4-year, $500,000 contract. And years later, he did graduate in 1983. Now, of course, it's the norm for players to leave college early or skip it altogether, as in the case of Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Kevin Garnett. But it actually took a lawsuit for the hardship rule to take hold.
They really, truly are gifted, graceful athletes. Here's Haywood. Spencer Haywood.
Spencer Haywood was the Denver Nuggets' first ever MVP, long before Nikola Jokic. And in 1970, he sued the NBA for barring him from signing a 6-year, $1.5 million contract with the Seattle Supersonics. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court. Peter Vesey covered the story.
So Spencer Haywood did play college ball. He didn't mm-hmm. come right out of high school, you know, like Moses did or right. Kobe did or many others.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant from Lower Merion.
He winds up signing with Denver in the ABA, and he has a sensational rookie year. MVP of this, MVP of that, rookie of the year, top scorer, top rebounder. I mean, you know, he's out of control. At the end of the year, the NBA comes courting, and Seattle, Sam Schulman was the owner. So Denver wouldn't do anything with his contract, and Seattle was willing to bring him into the NBA.
That's right.
And so the NBA said, no, we don't allow underclassmen to come until their class graduates. So there would have been another year for Haywood. He was never in the NBA draft, so Seattle felt that they could take him. And so it went to court, and it went to the Supreme Court, and he wins it.
Here's Bob Costas.
So eventually, the hardship rule comes into play, which now is gone, where you had to at least establish some kind of hardship. Now it doesn't make any difference. Your family can be millionaires. If you want to come out directly from high school or come out after 1 year, as so many do now from college, you can.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
You know, when we look back on it and think about what even the least of the players makes now, the last guy on the bench, it all seems so trivial, but these guys had to fight
right.
for the right to have free agency and the right to have some sort of control over their own lives and careers. And Spencer Haywood was kind of at the forefront of that. And I think what's lost to history largely is what a good player he was. He was a really good player.
Every year in the existence of the ABA, there was a competition for players coming out of college. So each year in college and each year that passed, there were always great players leaving college and having to make a choice between the NBA and the ABA.
There was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. There was Dan Issel. There was Artis Gilmore. There was Bill Walton.
Issel again. Issel just all over the place tonight.
Certainly one of the greatest players to ever play at the University of Kentucky was Dan Issel. Dan was the number one draft choice of the Detroit team. But tell me, who would want to go to Detroit and, you know, the snow when you could stay at home with all your friends and play at Freedom Hall? So Dan signed with us.
Dr. J, Artis Gilmore, and Dan Issel were all huge wins for the ABA. But then there's the one that got away. For my dad, that was Lou Alcindor.
Kareem with a big pressure shot.
Milwaukee later known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
The league appointed me to put together a strategy for signing Lou Alcindor. And as a result, in order to keep this whole project a secret, I named it Operation Kingfish. Examining who he was, where he grew up, what his history was, what was his relationship to his agent, what was his relationship to UCLA, what were the psychological things that could impact his decision. I kept the document in my desk called Operation Kingfish, and there was an employee who got his hands on that. I suspected this, and so the document in my desk wasn't valid. And I put a document in there that said we'd signed him. And the person, before being fired, passed the information on to the NBA that we had an operation and that we had already signed Lou Alcindor.
Another tale from the ABA's oral history. Do you remember the whole Operation Kingfish thing with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Do you know the story of the ABA trying to get Lou Alcindor?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, because he was drafted by the Nets.
Right.
And he was drafted by Milwaukee.
Right.
And so he said, and he was obviously serious, I'll accept one bid from each team, and that's it. And the Nets lowballed him. Now, they tried to come back and make him another offer, and he said no. Years later, this is fact, I heard from Ray Patterson, who was the president of Milwaukee at the time. So look, before I go there, so the Nets, of course, the whole league was willing to pool their resources to get Alcindor.
Sure.
So they had the money. Then Ray tells me that the NBA pooled its resources also. And I never knew that at the time when I was writing about it. I wish I had. He said, yeah, we couldn't afford to pay, you know, what we paid Alcindor. So it was a, you know, it was a group issue on both sides of the ledger.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, I don't know. My dad used to love telling this story, and he's like, George Mikan had $1 million of cash in a briefcase and was so convinced that Lou Alcindor was going to come to the ABA that
okay.
he didn't give him the money and left town. And then Alcindor took the money and went. I don't know that any of that is true, though, I want to say. I have no idea.
Wait a minute. You don't believe your father?
Well, he's pretty good at spinning a tale.
I don't know. I think it was true. I think there must have been some truth to that.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the mid-70s, it became evident that it was in everyone's best interest to forge some sort of merger. The NBA had grown from 9 franchises to 18 and was looking to get stronger. Here's my dad.
With the progression of time, not getting a big television contract, with the economic failure of many teams and the escalating price for players, having ownership in the league became increasingly difficult. As the ownership became conversant with the NBA ownership, a merger became a reality, and 4 teams did in fact merge with the NBA.
Those teams were the Denver Nuggets, Indiana Pacers, San Antonio Spurs, and New York Nets. Here's Peter Carey.
I think the NBA finally realized that better than fighting this war, we might as well get together with these guys. They have pieces of turf already marked out. They have some pretty attractive players. And the ABA teams, as I recall, I don't think the ABA teams did all that badly right from the gun.
How about players specifically like Dr. J, George Gervin, Moses Malone? I mean, these are among the greatest players of all time.
Gervin on the floor. I mean, is he a human highlight film or is he?
Yes, he is.
How do you think the ABA contributed to their development?
Moses is such a...
Malone off balance, but he gets it in. That's the blue-collar job that Moses has called.
You could have put Moses in a wrestling match with a bear and he would have won. It gave him a chance to play, to really show off in a way they probably couldn't of the day they arrived in the NBA. So when they did get in the NBA, they were pretty fully developed.
Players had all sorts of reasons to choose one league or the other. And for Dr. J, it was a seminal choice, central to who he would become as a player.
So that period, you know, being league MVP and winning 2 championships, you know, winning 74 and 76, you know, winning the ABA titles during those years, having Kevin Lockery as a coach, he gave me the freedom to be Dr. J.
Which meant what? The freedom to be Dr. J. What did that mean?
I think, you know, you go over a game plan in the locker room and then, you know, sometime late in the fourth, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, the coach kind of looks at you and says, okay, we've stuck with this plan long enough, and now we're down 5 points, and I want you to do something, you know? So that type of trust and, you know, and the team rallying and saying, okay, we got a leader who's going to make the right play and make the right decisions out here, and whether it's him scoring or getting somebody else set up, you know, the trust worthiness of the feeling that this is what's going to happen next. And it happens. I look back, and it's probably one of the better things about the ABA that has stuck with me all these years. That type of trust was given to me, and I succeeded with it.
Here's Bob Costas. What's the most important legacy of the ABA in your estimation?
First of all, fun. Craziness. Some of the stories can be told and some cannot. But also the three-pointer, the improvisational nature, where just let these players be creative. Let them do what their talent allows them to do, as opposed to what some guy put on on the X's and O's on a chalkboard. The ABA was flawed, but it was exciting. It was really, every night was exciting.
Why do you think it was flawed? Why didn't it survive in the end?
They were underfinanced, and they could never get a true national television contract. You know, the NBA was in most of the preferable markets. For a lot of folks, the ABA was just a rumor, but the rumors turned out to be true. You know, the skeptics who said, let's see how good these guys are. The first year after the merger, half of the starters in the final between Philadelphia and Portland, 5 of the 10 had played in the ABA. And that first year in the All-Star game, 10 of the 24 All-Stars had played in the ABA. That's how good the league was.
A half dozen ABA teams folded before the merger or accepted a buyout. My family's beloved Kentucky Colonels were one of them. While Bob Costas's Spirits of St. Louis cut one of the greatest business deals of all time.
The NBA wants to make sure that there are no antitrust suits filed. They've got to indemnify these others somehow. And I think they let John Y. Brown, who then owned the Colonels, buy in with Buffalo. They took care of the Squires' debts in Virginia. And so the Spirits say, wait a minute, if we got in, we'd be entitled to a slice of the TV money, right? Well, the TV money then was relatively inconsequential, less than $1 million per team annually from network television. So they say, how about this? There were 7 ABA teams at the time that the league folded.
Right.
Okay. So how about if we take 1/7 of the total that the 4 teams would take? 1/7. And the NBA just wants them to go away. They say, okay. But the Spirit's attorney inserts an important clause, in perpetuity.
Man.
And then it all explodes. Bird. Magic, Jordan, the Dream Team, David Stern takes it global. If they had put an NBA franchise on Jupiter in the 23rd century, the Silmas heirs would still be collecting. But eventually, after collecting hundreds of millions of dollars on the basis of this deal, the NBA came back to them for like the 5th or 6th time and said, couldn't we possibly close this out? So nobody benefited from the ABA like these two dudes did.
The ABA's merger with the NBA also helped change the course of East Coast basketball for decades, as Dr. J ended up with the Philadelphia 76ers.
The basket came up in Walton's face, and Walton said, had to be offense. That Julius is unbelievable in a wide open situation.
4 ABA teams had to pay $3.2 million. But for the Nets, for your team, it was worse because they were Knicks territory. So they had to pay an additional $4.8 million. And then all these teams were kind of vying for your services, you know, Milwaukee and LA and Philly. And the Nets actually offered your contract to the Knicks in return for waiving the fee. And the Knicks declined. Is that true? Because they wanted the money instead of like one of the greatest players of all time? Is this how it went down?
I have no idea whether that was true or not. I wasn't a party to the conversation.
Wow.
And when it came down to the two leagues merging, you know, they're like, you're not making the money that top players are making.
Right.
And so now we got back into the financial discussion, and the Nets wouldn't do it or couldn't do it. And they still owe the Knicks money. I just bought a house, Long Island, Upper Brookville, and, you know, had started a family. I didn't really want to go too far from Long Island. So it was the Knicks or the Sixers or maybe Washington. I wanted to be back home. So I wanted to live in my house, and I thought that I would be able to still commute to any one of those places and be a player there and live there in an apartment, you know, do part-time. And that's exactly what happened. I was happy with the geography because I had cousins in Philadelphia. So I had relatives in Philadelphia, and Long Island was commutable.
Knicks out screening now for three. Throws one up. It's the Lloyd Free Show.
Or so we thought. So that first year in Philly, World Be Free was commuting from Brooklyn, and I was commuting from Long Island. So I would swing by and pick him up. They let him ride.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
And we'd come rolling in. We'd come rolling into practice, rolling into games. We're coming from New York.
You guys are carpooling.
Like two New Yorkers who are holding on
that's
to New
hilarious.
York as best
oh
we could.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
And then that went for a year. And then the second year, Fitz, he said, man, you got to move to Philly.
Yeah, we need to. What kind of car were you guys driving back and forth from New York to Philly, by the way?
I had a van. It was like a, you know, van, customized vans in those days. They were
very fashionable. All tricked out. So it wasn't a sports car. It was a van.
No, it was a van. It was a van. And I drove sometimes. He drove other times.
As Dr. J's fame and fortune continued to grow in the NBA, his game was now on display for all to see and to reckon with. And he wasn't alone. In the first All-Star game after the merger, 10 of the 24 players had played in the ABA, including Dr. J, who was named the game's MVP. And 17 ABA players, along with two coaches, would be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. In the front office, times were changing too. In 1978, just 2 years after the merger, an ambitious young lawyer by the name of David Stern took a job as the NBA's general counsel. As my dad would later tell it, from day one, everyone knew Stern was a star.
And as David came in and took over, David recognized that professional basketball is first and foremost an entertainment vehicle. And the people that are entertaining in basketball are the star players. And David was one of the first people to acknowledge and recognize the wide open style of play that the American Basketball Association brought to the NBA, and therefore its growth and popularity throughout not only the United States, but the world.
David Stern would become my mentor, and everything that the ABA brought to the table, that was my father's basketball. It would shape my life for decades to come. Next on NBA DNA.
They had us out at a mall one day, me and a couple of players, and they have a banner, meet the Houston Rockets. An elderly lady comes up and says, oh my God, I love you guys. How do you fit in those spaceships? She thought we were with NASA.
For some strange reason, my father got accused of tanking the year.
The Houston Rockets select Hakeem Olajuwon.
Which was totally the truth. Because we had Hakeem Olajuwon played right there in town at the University of Houston.
NBA DNA with Hannah Storm is a production of iHeart Podcasts, the NBA, and Brainstormin' Productions. The show is written and executive produced by me, Hannah Storm, along with Julia Weaver and Alex French. Our lead producer and showrunner is Julia Weaver. Our senior producers are Peter Cowder, Alex French, and Brandon Reese.
editing and sound design by Kirk Guerin and Julia Weaver. The show's executive producers are Carmen Belmont, Jason English, Sean Titone, Steve Weintraub, and Jason Weichelt.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.